Hi, I'm Katie Marquette, and you're listening to the Noir and Bizarre.
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve?
They're demons. They're demons.
Experience the excitement, the danger.
But it would be slightly more difficult to pull off now, though, don't you think?
So this episode is dropping on Halloween. So first of all, happy Halloween. It's the spookiest day of the year. How are you celebrating? Are you taking your kids trick-or-treating? Are you going to a boozy costume party, watching scary movies, playing murder mystery games? Are you carving pumpkins, telling ghost stories? Well, whatever you're doing, did you ever stop to think how this all came about? How did this spooky, wacky holiday where we dress up as ghosts and goblins and celebrities come to be in the first place? Well, that's what I'm going to tell you a little bit about today. So you see, what we think of as Halloween today comes from ancient Celtic traditions, primarily from a holiday called Samhain, which is Gaelic for summer's end. And this holiday fell on November 1st. So the night before this harvest celebration was called All Hallows' Eve. And on this day, the Celtic people believed that ghosts would return to the earth and interact with the living. Bonfires were lit to drive the spirits away, parties took place, some people dressed up in animal skins to ward off evil ghosts. By 43 AD, the Roman Empire had taken over much of Celtic territory, and Roman festivals started influencing the way that the Celtic people celebrated Samhain. Two Roman holidays especially had a really big influence. They were called Feralia and Pomona, harvest festivals and days to celebrate the passing of the dead. The holiday went through another change by the mid-8th century when Pope Gregory II moved All Saints' Day from May 13th to November 1st. The Christian influence in Celtic lands was really strong by this time, and harvest holidays celebrating ghosts and the dead merged really naturally with Memento Mori Catholic masses and All Saints' Day celebrations. November 2nd became All Souls' Day, so the dying leaves became synonymous with prayers and celebrations for the dead. All this still doesn't explain modern Halloween with its emphasis on costume parties and getting candy from your neighbors. Well, in 1845, the Great Potato Famine forced roughly 1 million Irish people to emigrate to the United States, and they brought their Celtic Halloween traditions with them. Halloween in the 19th century was a night for pranks, tricks, and basically anarchy. Carving jack-o'-lanterns to scare your neighbors, maybe putting a tripwire on the sidewalk. And just because we can't ever have anything nice, basically harmless antics turned to complete mayhem quite quickly, and by the 20th century, the press was referring to the Halloween problem. So then the treat part came about. Vandals would demand sweets and then play a trick if they didn't get them. Cities responded by trying to eradicate Halloween altogether. In 1942, the Chicago City Council voted to abolish Halloween and instead instituted Conservation Day on the 31st. In 1950, President Harry Truman advised that Halloween be renamed as Youth Honor Day and encouraged kids to do good works on that day instead. Needless to say, none of these ideas really caught on. So the candy business and popular culture started embracing the treats part of Halloween. How about we teach kids that if you ask your neighbors nicely, you'll get candy? And candy companies really amped up advertisements and advised people to just have candy on hand on the 31st to avoid vandalism. This worked perfectly in the ever-expanding suburbs, and trick-or-treating came about. By 1965, candy and costume profits had hit $300 million and were rising. And Halloween has pretty much been the same ever since, with everyone developing their own unique traditions around the holiday. So whether you're trick-or-treating, what's the age cutoff on that, by the way? I'd definitely still go if it was at all socially acceptable. So if anyone wants to send me an email and let me know the age cutoff, be much appreciated. But so yeah, whether you're trick-or-treating or partying it up in a Party City costume and drinking some sort of witch's brew punch, those are always the most dangerous ones, by the way. Remember, you're participating in a Celtic tradition that goes back thousands of years. So have fun and stay safe. But enough history. I want to end this episode with a reading of one of my favorite poems. It's perfect for this time of year. It's called The Hollow Men by T.S. Eliot. The only Baltimore connection I could find here is that T.S. Eliot wasn't all that wild about our favorite Baltimore icon, Edgar Allan Poe. In a 1948 essay, From Poe to Valerie, he accuses Poe of slipshod writing and puerile thinking, and says that Poe's irresponsibility toward the meaning of words is not infrequent. He does have to admit, though, that Poe, quote, to an exceptional degree, had the feeling for the incantatory element of poetry, what might be called the magic of verse. So maybe on a future episode we'll have some readings of The Raven, and we can debate Eliot on some of his criticisms. But for now, light a Halloween candle, drink some sort of strong Halloween drink, and enjoy this reading of The Hollow Men by T.S. Eliot, read by my husband, Chris Marquette.
The Hollow Men by T.S. Eliot. We are the hollow men. We are the stuffed men, leaning together, headpiece filled with straw, alas. Our dried voices, when we whisper together, are quiet and meaningless as wind and dry grass, or rats' feet over broken glass in our dry cellar. Shape without form. Shade without color, paralyzed force, gesture without motion. Those who have crossed with direct eyes to death's other kingdom remember us, if at all, not as lost violent souls, but only as the hollow men, the stuffed men. Eyes I dare not meet in dreams, in death's dream kingdom, these do not appear. There, the eyes are sunlight on a broken column. There is a tree swinging, and voices are in the winds singing, more distant and more solemn than a fading star. Let me be no nearer in death's dream kingdom. Let me also wear such deliberate disguises, rat's coat, crow skin, crossed staves in a field, behaving as the wind behaves, no nearer. Not that final meeting in the twilight kingdom. This is the dead land. This is the cactus land. Here the stone images are raised. Here they receive the supplication of a dead man's hand under the twinkle of a fading star. Is it like this in death's other kingdom, waking alone at the hour when we are trembling with tenderness? Lips that would kiss, form prayers to broken stone. The eyes are not here. There are no eyes here, in this valley of dying stars, in this hollow valley, this broken jaw of our lost kingdoms. In this last of meeting places, we grope together and avoid speech, gathered on this beach of the tumid river. Sightless, unless the eyes reappear as the perpetual star, multifoliate rose of death's twilight kingdom, the hope only of empty men. Here we go round the prickly pear, prickly pear, prickly pear. Here we go round the prickly pear at 5 o'clock in the morning. Between the idea and the reality, between the motion and the act, falls the shadow. For thine is the kingdom. Between the conception and the creation, between the emotion and the response, falls the shadow. Life is very long. Between the desire and the spasm, between the potency and the existence, between the essence and the descent, falls the shadow. For thine is the kingdom. For thine is life is, for thine is the. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Thanks to Chris for reading that for us. He's a good sport to do these readings for me. And he also improvised that gorgeous piano music you're hearing. This poem encapsulates Eliot's wasteland, a generation totally disillusioned and morally wrecked. But I also think the imagery, the stuffed men, the hollow men, the eyes in death's kingdom, is perfect for Halloween, a time of year of imagination and introspection. Also, just a note to say that the Mexican and South American Day of the Dead traditions have had a huge influence on Halloween traditions in recent years. I didn't really get to cover that in this episode, but I hope to do a full episode in the future on these traditions. I hope everyone has a fantastic, spooky Halloween. The Noir and Bazaar is an original WYPR production, hosted and produced by me, Katie Marquette. Until next time, thanks for listening.